All right, everybody, welcome back to a very special episode of Sigma Cinema. Neil, how is it going this week, man? I haven't heard from you in a while.
It's going okay. excuse me. Did a tough mutter this past weekend for the first time. And finished up the seventh module out of 10 for my recertification. So
And what is it? What is a tough mutter?
it's a 5K race or run walk. I walked most of it. They add in like obstacles, so like you had to there were like logs that were chest height to jump over. There was a mud pit with barbed wire over that you had to crawl through, make a human pyramid, climb up ropes, all kinds of fun stuff like that.
Wow.
Now, in training for this, did you use any montage music?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I just had Live to Win playing over and over and over in my head.
Good. Good, as is tradition. Well, that's good. And the project manager stuff's going good.
Yeah, like I said, 7 out of 10 out of my first thing that I need to do. And then I'll
Okay.
start my classwork next week.
Okay. Well, yeah,
Very
keep on
nice.
keeping on. That's good to hear. You guys already heard from him a little bit there in the background. Gideon, how's it going this week, man?
Pretty good. Yeah, not too much going on. I did go see Spider-Man in the theaters. Sad to report, it was probably the worst theatrical experience of my year
Oh
so far.
no.
It was like, I'll be brief, but it was just like a group of like five teenage boys in front of us, like talked the whole time, and then a group of like six teenage girls in the row to the right of us. And then they both like knew each other, so it was like even worse.
Oh
And
no.
then so they
Girls
like
laughing.
talked the whole
JPEG.
movie. What'd you say? Sorry.
It's a girls laughing dot JPEG.
Dude, it was rough. Like they were like taking photos. I counted like five dropped phones in the theater. It was just like ridiculous. And like someone went out and like told on the people that were talking, and then they like told them to be quiet, but then they like were still so bad that they ended up leaving. And I just like toughed it out, but honestly, I should have like went and tried to get a refund or something. But the worst was like at the end, they like had the gall to like clap when the movie ended. I was like, who are you clapping for? I was like, you talked over Uncle Ben dying and you were laughing at that, okay? Like, you're not showing us any respect and you're not showing Uncle Ben respect. So I was like infuriated because I was like gonna go see the second one. I was like, I'm done after that. I'll watch at home. But other than that, playing a little more Ghost of Tsushima, finishing up that the side quest stuff, and I did experience the Daft Punk Fortnite live event, which like that was the opposite of my Spider-Man experience. That like healed my negative experience. It was like so awesome.
Good, good. That's good to hear. Well, now we both have a negative theater going Spider-Man experience because as
Ooh.
I think I told you last week, when the original Spider-Man came out in the old Muscatine theater, the projectionist had not seen it yet and went to the bathroom in the middle of the movie and paused it while he went to the bathroom.
Psycho.
Oh my
I was
God.
y yes. I remember it clear as day. He like left for 10 minutes. I was like, I'll be right back. And came back and started the movie back up. So,
Crazy.
oh man. And that movie theater is now in a dead mall. And I think the sign for the theater still exists, right, Gideon?
I think it, yeah, I think it's all still up there. I haven't been in the mall physically in a couple of years. I'll have to check next time I
Right.
go in there for like a walk or in the winter or
Right. Yeah.
whatever.
Next time I'm home and want to feel some
Yeah.
bad feeling,
Feel
I'll
really
go do
depressed, I'll
that.
go in there.
Yeah. Okay. And last but certainly not least, all the way from some part of Washington, right? Where are you calling from, Jesse?
Oh, in Seattle.
Seattle. Okay. Is Jesse and Jesse's dad, Mike, as a special guest on the podcast this week. So, welcome, boys. Jesse, how's it going this week? How is Seattle's probably rainy. How's it going up there?
You know, the rainy season just started like today, maybe yesterday. But we had a really beautiful summer. But yeah, it's time to kind of sober up and get used to the rain for a little bit. I've had a good week. I'm kind of still in the honeymoon of my new job. I'm no longer with Starlink, and I'm working on construction robots. And yeah, my right now it's super fun. My desk looks like a little playground. I've got like power supplies and circuit boards and lots of blinking lights, and so yeah, I'm having a ton of fun.
That sounds awesome. Yes, I can relate to the good weather ending. That smell is in the air, where I fear that soon I will have to shelf the motorcycle for the long winter ahead. So I, you know, not a good feeling around these parts. And Mike, how's it going? Tell us a little bit about yourself and how's it going? You're visiting your son in Washington this week?
No, I'm living here.
You're living here. Okay.
Yeah. No, it's been a good week for me. I work at a butcher shop in Woodinville, Washington. Today was technically my day off, but I went in. We just got a new smoker, and I got relegated to putting it together. So, yeah, I did that today. Haven't been really playing much games lately, though, but... I think the last game I probably played was actually Ghost of Tsushima.
Nice.
I'm just, Jesse said that, you know, you guys did this and that I could be a guest on it. And I'm like, cool, I definitely will do that.
And I used to do something kind of like
that. Yeah. A group of guys used to get together at this guy named Brent Meyer's house, and he had the ultimate male bachelor set up. And we'd watch a movie, and I usually cooked something for everybody, and we would eat, watch a movie, and then shoot the shit about it afterwards. So
And was there alcohol consumed in this process?
You know, usually not, honestly.
Oh, well. Okay.
He had like
all right. Well.
Oh yeah, he had a special order. You know, actually
a special order TV.
Pull down a screen.
Oh, now, you know, I see.
Yeah, a projection, you know, HD projection. And he had theater style seats. And I'm like, you know, this guy, he was the ultimate, like,
neat.
Yeah. You know, he collected movie props, not
Stigma King.
Not replicas. He collected props. He actually had stuff from Conan, the first Indiana Jones movie. He had the, I forget which actor it was. I was going to look it up, but one of the, if you're familiar with the Raiders of the Lost Ark, the final scene where the they're standing on that platform or whatever, and the ark is spewing out and people are melting. Well, he has one of the set worn costumes of one of those guys. I can't remember which one it is.
Anyway, yeah, that is a cool scene that scared the absolute bejesus out of me when I was 10 years old. Yeah. So I'm familiar. Yes.
Yeah, he like I said, he collected stuff, and unfortunately, he has since passed, rather abruptly. So, little shout out to Brent Myers and the Monday Night Men's Night. That's what we call it.
The Monday Night Men's Night.
Yep. Rip in pieces. Pour one out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, pouring out a nice cool.
This one's for Brent.
Okay. Well, that is excellent. So why did you want to... out of all movies, you picked John Carpenter's The Thing. Was this 1981 or 82?
1982.
And why did you want to bring this movie to the podcast?
It's just one that probably flew under the radar of a lot of people. When it hit the theaters, it didn't, you know, it bombed. It had like a $15 million budget, and they only recouped, I think they like maybe $19 million. It went like immediately to VHS, which... In the early 80s, it was kind of the Wild West of when people were releasing stuff onto video. And this was back when you had to actually rent a VCR because they were super expensive. So you had to rent the VCR and the video. Anyway, Long story short, it was actually released September 29th, 1982, and that just happens to be my birthday. So I was 13 years old when that movie got released on VHS.
That's all
perfect. Now, so did you see it on or around release then?
No, I didn't see it. I didn't become aware of it till about 85 or thereabouts. And then I saw it, and you know, I liked it. It was cool. John Carpenter, you know, underrated director. But anyway, it wasn't until I had met Brent then, because I, you know, our relationship didn't really evolve until probably 2015, 2017, somewhere around in there. And we were talking about movies and stuff, and we were talking about Big Trouble in Little China, and that's another Carpenter film. And he's like, oh, have you ever seen The Thing? I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, and so went back and watched that with him. So it had been several years since I had seen it, and, you know, I don't know.
Okay, awesome. Well, now we've got your history on it. Jesse, had you heard about this movie? Had you ever seen this before watching it for the podcast this week?
So funny enough, I was kind of aware that it existed in the like in a very, very vague sense. Like the swamp thing kind of occupies a similar thing in my mind, whereas like I know that there is this piece of media that exists and is popular. I have no idea what it's about or what kind of monster it is. I had no idea what I was in for. So this is really, really cool to see it happen. However, I've gotten a bunch of other references to extremely similar things. And so, for instance, I used to play custom StarCraft maps way back in the day on dial-up. And one of the custom StarCraft games was called The Thing, and it was your job to, like, repair the ship. And one person in the game was The Thing, and they go around, and slowly people disconnect from the game. It's pretty ominous. If you remember how StarCraft, like, you know, how the
game... like a yellow notification in the text box that says...
Exactly. You know, and there's no more... You can't see them talk anymore. There's no post-chat... if they're a good sport, they don't like whisper you about who it was or what color they're
right.
So anyway, that was like my first, I guess, proper exposure to The Thing. But even that, still, you know, it kind of like, okay, I kind of know what I'm in for, but not really.
So. right. You'd played a couple games of Among Us, and that was about it. And this was and of course you watched this with the full family, right? I mean, everybody was involved. You got the popcorn, you got the milk duds.
Oh yeah, I mean, it was just me and my dad. We watched it a couple times.
Yeah, perfect. Popcorn. Yeah, I will probably have to wait until my son is a little bit older to show him The Thing. But that'll be a don't tell your mother kind of a night. I'm looking forward to that. Neil, how about you? What was your history with The Thing? I'm pretty sure you've seen this before because we've talked about it in the past a lot.
Yeah, I've seen this a couple of times. At least once in high school. I come back to this every couple of years, I'd say. I did want to ask, has anybody here seen either the original, like, 1950s The Thing from Outer Space, or the 2011 prequel?
No,
not yet.
No, but I know Mary Elizabeth Winstead is in the 2011 one, so it's on my list.
Yeah, is that John Carpenter also the prequel?
No.
No.
I
was just having some thoughts about it because I've heard that it went sort of through production hell and wound up not being very good. But I do kind of want to see it just from like a not to get too far into it, but like the perspective of like we see the Norway. So the premise is that it's the Norwegian base prior to The Thing making it to the American base. And so, like, I'm sure, you know, there's all kinds of, like, visual goodies when the Americans are investigating the Norwegian based in this, in the 1980s version. And I think it could have been fun to see, like, that's how that happened. That's who this was. Like, whether or not it came out well or not,
I
idea of the prequel for this is at least interesting to me.
I do know that the set was true to the original. They did a lot of research on the original set, and it was true to that as far as, like, props go.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't seen it myself.
Okay. So how about you, Gideon? What's your history with the thing? And I'm assuming you've seen it before, but I don't know.
Yeah. And just to piggyback what Neil was saying, I'm in a similar boat. I'm very curious about the 2011 prequel just because I think that premise sounds cool. So even if it's not the greatest, I'm sure it'd be fun to check out. As far as this movie goes, this is my fourth time watching it, I think, now. The first time I watched it was 2018, I think. And I had kind of vaguely knew about the movie because I remember in, like, middle school or elementary school, I was at a friend's house, and there's the Thing original Xbox video game. And I was, like, super horror-averse, like, growing up. Now I'm a lot more into horror stuff. But I just remember being absolutely terrified, and all I knew was it was just a scary monster chasing you in the snowy base or whatever. And I think Night Dive Studios did, like, a remaster that I'd like to check out and play. But even at that time, I never really knew that was, like, related to any kind of movie or anything. And when I saw it in 2018 or 19, I went in pretty blind. And I had actually just watched this about a month before. I rewatched it last night, and I watched it like August 9th with a buddy, but it was like super late at night and I was like pretty sleepy. So on this fourth watch, I watched it with the director commentary on the 4K Blu-ray. So that was really fun. I wrote down some notes from dude. It is fucking gorgeous on 4K Blu-ray. It looks really nice.
We'll get into how good this movie looks. For sure. So I think what we'll do then is we'll go back down the list of people, and we'll just give our kind of our 10,000 foot thoughts of, you know, how much we liked it and what we thought kind of overall before we get more into the nitty gritty details. So I'll just go kind of in reverse here. So Gideon, I'm assuming you had probably a pretty good time watching it.
Oh yeah, definitely. I think it's just, you know, really well done. I like the whole cast. The special effects are like all timers and just still like shocking in so many different ways. A couple of fun facts I learned about with the commentary track. So, like, I remember that scene with the dog when it's getting blasted with like the nasty ooze or whatever. I was really worried and like scared for the dog the first time I watched it. I was like, God, that must have been horrible for them. And they talked about how they had the Humane Society like with them, and they're spraying them. I forget what the actual thing is called, but it's like an ingredient in Twinkies. And so they said it was like completely harmless. And also when they find the first like frozen guy who like slashed his wrist and you see like his frozen blood, it was the same thing made out of some kind of like sugary ingredient from Twinkies that made like the gel, red gel blood. So that was really interesting. Yeah, I just think it's really fun. It's a really unique horror movie. I love that it's all icy and arctic and all the paranoia and just not knowing like if someone's infected or not. One thing I didn't think about but makes more sense, especially with the context being in 82. They also talked about how like AIDS was starting to become a bigger thing, and it, you know, they didn't know like how people were getting it, and you had to do like a blood test just like they do in the movie to figure out who has it. And that was kind of, it probably added to the horror for some people at that time. So, yeah, I just think it's a really excellent movie. It's just really fun. I don't really get tired of it. You know, even though I watched it the month before, I mean, I could watch this every month probably.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with a lot of what you said there. Something special to note about the special effects, which we will definitely get to, is that the guy who was responsible for leading the special effects team was Rob Bottin. He was 22 when he did this movie.
Wow.
That's so awesome. Yeah.
He has like a special effects total. Yes. Like, yeah, exactly. Neil, how about you? Kind of your 10,000 foot thoughts.
Yeah, I think this is probably my favorite John Carpenter movie that I've seen. Yeah, like despite like taking a very, you know it's a sci-fi movie at least in part. But it just feels very grounded. Like nobody makes like really dumb decisions. Like at least like they might be dumb to you as the viewer because you have a wider context, but like everybody is like using the information that they have and they're like being rational. And I just really like the amount of time that they spend early on in the base just like showing like, you know, it's like what 12 guys and they're just all schlubs just, you know, trying to not go crazy in this like remote Antarctic research station. And in particular, the opening scene where MacReady is playing the chess computer and destroys it really just resonates with me. I've been practicing chess lately on Duolingo, and Oscar's trash talk drives me up the fucking wall, so I totally understand the impulse to
destroy the early 80s $40,000 chess computer that only does chess, and that's it.
Yeah, that you have to put that you have to input the control the movements into the keyboard because there isn't a mouse yet.
Oh my god, barbaric. Well, yeah, Jesse and Mike, how about you two? 10,000 foot thoughts. I'm sure you have liked it to some degree.
Well, it's just a really well put together movie. The practical effects are just really good, and it does a really good job in your classic slasher horror films. Everybody wants to stay together because the person that leaves the group, they're going to be dead. But this fosters I want to be by myself because I don't know which one of these MFers the thing, you know. So you're isolated, and then you're wanting to self-isolate from the isolation. So no, it's a pretty tense thing, and the ending, you know, up in the air, you know. So I like that, to leave it open like that for interpretation.
It is a very dark ending. I agree with you there. How about you, Jesse?
I thought it was awesome. I really like the monster. It was just such a neat idea. And I love that the sci-fi aspect of that. Is so different from a lot of other things. Even Alien was more tangible. It was similarly mysterious in that there's like this human host and stuff, but the thing was just a total wild card, and all you knew is that someone had it and you didn't know who. And so that was a really cool idea. I'm also a big fan of ambiguity. I'd tricked myself into thinking like, oh, this is how, I know how it ended. I know who's what. But then I thought about it a little more. It's like, wait, no, that doesn't quite make sense. Sure, we'll talk about that a little bit. But and as far as the horror goes, the sort of game of, who's it, and finding out slowly who pops I really like how they did it. And the scene where like they did the blood test and you kind of figure out for just a brief moment who's who, you get this like sense of ease, but it doesn't last very long. So it was awesome. I had fun watching it, and I had fun watching it again because we watched it twice. Once just to get it out, and then another one to be a little bit cool.
Yeah, you know. when it, I had a note written down about the blood test scene. You know, something that really stands out about it to me is that when, you know, he sticks the hot metal in the blood, everybody else has a sigh of relief, but it's always interesting to watch the person whose blood it is. They also sigh in relief too, as if like they're starting to go insane and they don't know if they're the thing or not. They don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
So it's a very, very tense scene.
Well, it's not clear, you know, again, about the, like, how does the thing work? It's not all the way spelled out. It's not obvious that people who have it know that they have it, but also sometimes maybe they do know. Like the guy who popped in that scene, I think he did know because he kind of like rolled his eyes when they pulled the petri dish out. Maybe that's not what he did, but that's what it looked like to me. But then in other times, you know, a couple of guys like set themselves on fire, or at least it seems like they did. What was his name? The guy with the glasses, the really cool, calm, collected guy who like was kind of the one-on-one with Mac. What was his name? They found his like torched body in the snow, and they found his glasses, and they
assumed, I want to say Brake or Burke or something Fuchs, like that. Fuchs.
Yeah, they found Fuchs in the snow, and they're like, oh, he must have offed himself. So it's like sometimes maybe they know, and sometimes they don't.
Right, and you've got enough agency to still light yourself up. Like the thing can't take your own agency away from you, like early in the digestion process or something. Yeah, you're right. It is somewhat vague as to the nature of the monster, which is, I think, like, we never see the thing in its base form, I don't think.
Mm-mm. I mean, like, the thing is, I don't think we ever see what the thing originally looks like.
And you don't know either whether the thing is, the thing mimics or gains some of the intelligence of the host to some degree because they can like walk around and talk like them. So something is preserved, and it's not clear whether the thing has its own intelligence or it's like crash. Like, did it crash land on Earth because it was like stuck in some other life form, or is the ship that it crashed on Earth with like the ship that it had on its own planet that it built it by itself?
Right. It like creates an interesting backstory in itself without really, you know, having to like lore dump a bunch of stuff on us. Go ahead, guys.
At one point, I think the doctor was, you know, poking around on the computer and it said likelihood that, you know, one of us is infected 75%, and then it gave like 27,000 days until the whole world's infected. So was that whole scenario played out on another planet, and that was just somebody escaping, inadvertently having the thing in the spaceship, and he purposely crashed it thinking he was going to kill the thing.
Right. Mm. Well, speaking of intelligence and whether this thing is intelligent or not, or it gains the intelligence of somebody else, I'll tell you guys about my own lack of intelligence watching this movie. Did anybody else watch the scene with the dog in the cage with all the other dog and think to themselves, "Oh my god, this dog is such a good actor"?
Oh yeah,
Well, and when they're playing the music, the Superstitious song.
Yeah.
And the dog like is like peering around the corner. I was like, oh, what a great actor.
Right, exactly.
And the winner for the Academy Award for Best Actor goes to
Jed the dog. Jed.
Turbo. I think Turbo, the German Shepherd.
Woof woof. The dog came with Jed. I mean,
oh.
Mm-hmm. One thing to speak to that in the commentary track, that whole tracking shot where you see the dog like come into the hallway and he like looks in that one empty room and like pauses, comes down the hallway further, looks in, pauses, and then enters. They said that was like all the dog, like it was not being directed and they weren't like telling it what to do. So like, yeah, the dog is like a true MVP of the movie. I feel like he's excellent.
And I feel like the dog does a lot of heavy lifting, but I think I know what you're gonna say, Jesse. It's that dum-dum, dum-dum.
So good.
That synthy two-note kind of beat that plays throughout the movie is like, oh my God. Actually written by Ennio Morricone, the same guy who did the score for The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. So,
Oh, wow.
Well, so apparently, he got nominated for a Razzie for his music on this one. And he reused parts of the score that weren't used for this for Hateful Eight, which he got a nomination for a what is it, a Grammy, an Oscar, or something like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
And isn't a Razzie like it's not like a good award necessarily?
Yeah, it's like for bad movies and stuff.
Like the it's like the Raspberry Awards.
Like Halle Berry got a raspberry for Catwoman is kind of like the
Okay,
category we're talking about here. Yeah, but I think like the music or lack thereof is extremely effective. Like it's such a quiet, foreboding atmosphere that this movie kind of creates. Which I feel like we should also talk about MacReady's hat.
oh my God, it's so good. It's so funny, dude. It's like the movie is so self-serious, and then you see his hat sometimes. It's the best, dude.
Oh my God. Yeah, the hair and the hat and the glasses and the spooky are totally out of control.
Yeah, they were laughing about that in the commentary, and he was like, "Yeah, that hat's ridiculous, but it never left me." Like he just had it with him the whole time.
So, Jesse, you said you took a lot of notes during this movie. What kind of strange arcane hypotheses are you cooking up over there?
Let's see what I have here. Well, my notes are just kind of like half sentences, but I will try to pick some out. No women.
True.
Yeah, that's funny. Superstitious with dogs sneaking around. Okay. One question is who got first? Like who got it first? That's not
Oh,
really.
that is an interesting question. Does anybody have any theories on who Patient Zero was?
I didn't go back and look at it, but after thinking about it, it's like whoever got licked in the face, right? Probably.
Well, yeah, that I
Well,
forget really.
when they're showing the dog walking around in the compound, there's a scene where, you were just talking about where the dog pauses and walks into the room. There's a shadow on the wall, but we are unclear of who's casting that shadow. But I think that might have been the first person.
It kind of, the shadow kind of looks to me like it's the guy who pops later in the blood scene. You know who I'm talking about? I don't know what
Yeah.
his name is. He kind of has like a Jufro, but
Parker, I think
and like a
the
jean
lady.
jacket.
Yeah, I think it's Parker.
Yeah.
Parker. Yeah,
The
I it
radio
kind of, the
guy.
shadow kind of looks like, no, not the radio guy, the
Palmer.
other Jufro guy.
Yeah, Palmer.
Okay.
Palmer. Yeah, it kind of looked like Palmer to me, but it could have been like, do you guys think that they intentionally cast people whose silhouettes would be similar so you wouldn't exactly know whose silhouette that was? Like if it was MacReady with the fucking hat, we all would have known right off
Right. Oh,
the
it was purposeful ambiguity,
Yeah.
but I think that the actual shadow that was cast on the wall wasn't even one of the cast members. They used somebody from the crew.
I believe it was cast by a man named Dick Warlock.
Holy
No way.
fuck.
That's an awesome name.
No way.
No, I'm very confident of that.
Dick Warlock is credited as like the, what is he? He's like the stunt man, or he's like Kurt Russell's stunt double.
That's awesome.
It's a great name. That's like my dad. He grew up next door to a guy named Rusty Bolt. That was like his God-given name.
Rusty Bolt.
Rusty Rodney Bolt. Yeah.
That's so funny.
Just giving you guys a little view of what Muscatine is like. So
one of the other ones that I took was people running around outside in their coats. That was such an interesting little tactic, too. Just again, this ambiguity. Who's doing it? Who is it? You never know. And that was kind of a fun trick that they used a bunch of times.
Yeah, even at the end when Keith David is like, oh, I was off, I ran after something in the snow, and then I got lost on the way back. That's why I've been missing for so long. You know, it's definitely a good setting for this whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Also, that first scene, when they burn the first stuff, and they're all standing around in a ring.
Yeah.
Like with the fire. That's like so metal. And it was just like, that's when I was like, oh yeah, this movie is going to be awesome.
It also echoes the footage of the Norwegian guys standing around the UFO as they're like right. blowing it out of the ice. That's they use that a couple times. I also really like when they light the redheaded guy on fire and he makes that crazy noise like a sand person from Star Wars, and then they just light him up. So I think we're
why there are so many flamethrowers.
They're like two at least.
The flamethrowers make sense to me, like for like melting off ice. But the question I had is why do they have so many guns, and why did the Norwegian team have so many thermite grenades?
Yeah.
Was there some special like authority that went along with the revolver? Because they had a closet full of like rifles, but it seemed like the revolver had some special connotation.
The revolver, the older guy.
Yeah,
they're all older guys except for MacReady, and not all of them, but like there's a lot of old guys. There's a freaking
Wilford Brimley.
His revolver to MacReady.
Yeah, the I'm talking about the guy who kind of looks like a skinny Donald Leslie Donald. Nielsen.
I think his character name is Gary.
Yeah,
Gary.
Donald Moffat.
Yes, sir, Gary. Yeah.
Yep.
So I think we're burying the lead a little bit. I think the thing to talk, the real thing to talk about with the thing, is that this is probably one of, if not the best special effect movie of the pre-CGI era. Would anybody disagree with that? I mean, can anybody name another pre-Jurassic Park movie that looks better than this for special effects?
I mean, I obviously, I think Alien is up there.
Alien's there. I was going to say Blade Runner is like, mm-hmm. It's right there too.
Alien, because that was 79.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
You know, Blade Runner, I think that was 82 also.
Mm-hmm.
I could be wrong.
That's another fun trivia fact of this movie. This movie and Blade Runner both came out on the same day in 1982.
That's so awesome.
That's a hell of a double feature right there. And then like E.T. came out like the week before it. And so both of these movies bombed because everybody was too busy going to see E.T. over and over again.
Oh, yeah, because that was a family-friendly movie. The thing definitely was not.
Well,
yeah,
so
unless your dad is the cool dad and then takes you to the thing. And then Neil, go ahead.
So I was just going to say, apparently, John Carpenter really wanted to avoid comparisons to Alien. One of them being like the reason that he focused so much on having the fantastic special effects is that he wanted to make sure that nobody could accuse them of it just being a guy in a rubber suit. And you know, so we reviewed Alien 2 weeks ago actually, and we talked about there's like the hugging scene in the ventilation shafts. There are moments where that costume just doesn't quite work anymore because it's a guy in a rubber suit.
Right.
And I think you know all the work that went into making it so that it didn't look that way definitely makes this movie stand out.
Mm-hmm.
And it also, oh, sorry. Sorry, good.
No, you're good. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say it also like keeps you guessing as to like what the alien, what the thing is capable of. Like the scene in the dog pen is like, okay, so it just split its face open and now it's spraying the dog with acid and it's got tentacles. Like it's throwing so much at you that you don't know what it's going to be capable of later.
Oh my gosh. When Norris's head detaches itself.
Yeah.
I was crawling in the couch. I was just like, no, 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 no. And then it popped legs out and crawled away. Oh my God. That was cherry on top. It was and it wasn't totally gratuitous. Like it had like there was a purpose to like doing that, which was now they learned that like the thing it's like not a single entity and there's self-preservation baked into like every little piece. Which gave him the idea to do the new blood test. So yeah, totally dope.
Well, when the head sprouted, the legs and stuff, I think Palmer, somebody said, "You got to be kidding me."
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, that is. I think that's exactly how I felt as well. The first time I saw the guy's chest split open, grow teeth, and then bite that guy's arms off, I was just like, "You got to be shitting me with this movie!" Like this is the
Well, and they actually used a double amputee as a stand-in to do that scene.
Whoa.
They put the rubber sleeves over his stump that had, you know, stuff hanging off of it to look like the tendons, whatnot.
Wow.
That's awesome. I feel like it's like one of those things you can't get away with anymore. Go ahead.
You're good. The guy whose ribs open up like that, he had to lay on that table for like a full 8 hours, they said, to do the makeup, which is just like such dedication for such an insane scene. Like, I feel like even the name is so fitting, and just like you can kind of sum it up in a few words. Like, they referenced how it's kind of like revisiting the, I guess there was like an original short story, and it was called Who Goes There? Which is pretty apt if you wanted to just sum it up. It's like, yeah, what is this? And also just the name of it being the thing. It's like when you first see the monster, you're just like, what am I looking at? Like it's erupting. The face is like splitting open and then the jaw is like falling apart. And then it gets these tentacles. It sprouts like arms and busts through the ceiling. And then, yeah, it looks like this like crab head monster thing. And yeah, like that other line, it's like, oh, you got to be fucking kidding me. Like, that's like how I would be feeling if I was trapped in that situation. Like, it's just a never ending new nightmare every like 20 minutes.
Actually, I think the middle scene, this is like one of my only issues with the movie, is the middle climax, which is the defibrillator scene, is so incredible. I think the final confrontation is, I don't want to say a little weak in comparison, but I expected like, you know, another major jump in terms of the creature design or the special effects or whatever. But I think the last mutation of the thing is a little bit pedestrian compared to like watching the guy's head crawl off the table. Does anybody else kind of feel that way about the ending of this movie?
Do you mean when they're like underneath?
Yeah, like when it's like the two dudes in the dock.
Yeah, I did. I was like, wait, they're bringing the dog back. They're running this out. I thought we already saw this one. And the tentacle like snatches the plunger, which that makes sense. I understand why the monster did that, but nothing. There wasn't really a consequence because like Mac was still able to blow everything up anyway. So I wasn't quite. I was a little confused about that.
I like the ending of this movie well enough. And I think the actual ending, like with Keith David and Kurt Russell sitting in the snow, is like so dark and awesome. I think it's like brilliant. But the action conclusion of this movie is a little bit like they already blew their load a little bit with the dog scene and the elevator scene. So that's like my really only major issue with this movie. I don't know if you guys have any negative points you want to bring up.
Yeah, I've got one other one. So the doctor or the smart guy building the ship.
That's what I was going to bring.
Oh, you're going to. Okay.
Go ahead. I'm just glad somebody else was bringing it up.
Yeah, I was like, that seemed a little inconsistent to me, because it's not like they were running around for weeks or whatever. And it just seemed like improbable that the thing was able to assemble this ship. And like shortly after they found it, they were reasoning that, well, the ship, the thing just wants to go back to sleep and it wants to get buried back in the ice. It's like, well, does it want to blast off in the ship or does it want to get buried in the ice? Like nothing has changed. So which is it? So that was a little, that felt a little mysterious to me.
But you, Neil, any major complaints with the thing?
No. No.
How was your whole aversion to body horror doing with this movie, by the way?
It doesn't get triggered on this one. I love this is like the exception that proves the rule or something. I love it so much. It's just so well done. Like, I will say, like, the scene of the chest opening up and chomping the guy's hands off, like, oof, you know, makes me go, ugh, but like in a good way rather than like a, I don't want to watch this anymore. Mm-hmm. No, in Warhammer 40K, there's a creature called a Chaos Spawn. And I think that they like took the design of that like directly from the thing. So I'm all over this thing.
Awesome. Well, that's good to hear. Gideon, any negatives that you could bring up here?
I think I'm in the same boat with Neil. Like, I really can't think of anything I don't like or love. One thing we didn't really mention, but the lighting is super cool.
Oh, it looks great.
Those blue lights they used, they talked about those being used for like airports. Yeah, I mean, as far as negatives, I really can't think of one, to be honest. I just really enjoy it. I just think it's like super entertaining, super rewatchable, which I'm always looking for with movies.
Great even, day like, movie.
Yeah, make it or break it. one thing which I guess I didn't even really know till I watched it with the commentary track, but like how you guys had talked about, oh, like they're bringing the dog back. They were talking about how it, you know, it's like we never really see like phase one of it or what it looks like originally, but they were talking about how it just always like perfectly imitates whatever it's trying to copy or mimic. And so like even when we see the head and it like scurrying off, it could have been, you know, from some crustacean like creature from another planet. And then it's like it was almost like they described it like Russian nesting dolls, and it's like that's kind of maybe why we see the dog again. And because it's like still within there, it's just like another layer on top of it. Mm-hmm. Which I didn't really realize the first couple times I'd seen this. But yeah, I mean, I can't think of anything I don't like about this.
That reminds me of, I think, like the grossest scene in the movie for me, or the one that like affects me the most, is watching Wilford Brimley cut the creature open once it had already eaten the dog, and it had like the half digested, half transformed dog head in there. You guys know what I'm talking about? Or yeah, he opens it and he's like, Jesus Christ. He doesn't say Jesus Christ, but something like that.
I thought okay. That smelled bad on the outside.
Yeah. Exactly. All right. Well,
I want to ask one last thing with the body horror stuff. Did any of you guys feel like squeamish when they were like cutting their thumbs to bleed?
Oh, totally.
Because yeah, that's one
when
thing.
When that scene came up, I obviously knew it was going to. I immediately was watching Jesse's reaction because I knew there was going to be some, oh my God.
Because I'm with Neil too, where it's like all the monster stuff is really cool. I the first time I watched it, the dog scene really like shook me. but now it's just really epic, I think, and metal. But yeah, like they were talking about how a lot of people, that was what made them squeamish, like people cutting their thumbs, and they were like laughing about it. And they were like, it's a simple thing we did. Like, they just think it's funny.
Oh, one thing I forgot to mention. I thought it was really cool how, at least in the beginning, they really made you think it, like Clark was had it. He was so monotone, and he was around the dogs, and they were like, Clark, why? What are you doing with this dog around here? And he's like, oh, I don't know, just letting him run around. And you kind of got the sense that like Clark's got it. But then mm-hmm. he turned out to be like he got shot and killed as a human.
Yep.
Clark, I just sounds like every major stoner I've ever met in my life. There's something very, very calm about Clark, unusually calm. One last note I will say from my perspective about this movie is I've only seen this a few times. I saw it like once in high school. And then Grace and I's third date, we watched The Thing. You know, I was thinking, oh, okay, she's going to be a little scared. It's going to be a good opportunity for some couch time. This is going to go great. And we had Buffalo Wild Wings right before watching The Thing. And then Grace got like the worst food poisoning of her life on our third date. So there was a body horror of a different kind going on in my apartment that night. What the dog was doing to those poor other dogs, that's basically what Grace was doing in the other room the whole night. So, you know, we got familiar with each other real quick, and, you know, a lot of barriers came down that night. So I have a lot to thank John Carpenter for. Let's just put it that way. Well, guys, we're coming up on the last few minutes of the show here. This is the point where I say speak now or forever hold your peace in terms of, like, last bits you want to, you know, if there's anything that didn't fit into the rest of the show that you want to say, go ahead and let it rip, and then we're going to give scores, and then we'll get out of here.
Does anyone think that either of the two guys at the end of the movie was the Thing?
No.
Yeah, I'm going to lean no as well.
I've vacillated back and forth.
Right, like, depends on the day.
Right.
And I feel like it's darker if they're not, and they're just, like, deathly suspicious of each other.
So one thought that I had was that the Childs is the Thing because the music plays right when Mac hands him the... His like booze.
J&B.
Mm-hmm. His J&B. His handy dandy J&B. like the, you know, you get the score, the bump bump, right when he hands him the and he like takes a swig, and that's when you get it. And also Mac like chuckles a little bit. Right when that happens. Which does not prove of anything, but they did have this rule that you're not supposed to share your stuff. But prepare, maybe at that
prepare
point,
prepare your own meal.
Yeah, prepare your own meals. Don't share anything. But maybe at that point, you know, with like everything literally on fire.
Yeah.
They're just like whatever. Another reason that it, and then I started going back on it because, okay, well, if Childs really was the alien, there's like no reason that he wouldn't just use the flamethrower on Mac. Because he had a flamethrower, and I watched the scene a couple times back over just to double check, and Mac didn't have dynamite around his neck anymore, so it was like he could have just used the flamethrower, and if he really did want to just bury himself in the ice, he could have, and he takes the risk off the table of Mac like making one final draw or whatever. So yeah, it's totally unclear, and I think either way, it sucks, and it's like, damn, that's cold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is very, it is almost darker not knowing. There's something about the, like, underlying suspicion of everything that is like, the most Maybe man was the real monster the whole time. Anyway, Neil, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I just think that like trying to overthink who might still be the thing at the end defeats the purpose. Like I'm sure there's like 3-hour YouTube essays on it.
Oh, there are.
And I just think like, you know, it's the opposite of the Sam problem. Like, no, don't explain it. Just don't explain it. Leave it up in the air.
Which is strange for John Carpenter, the master of expository dialogue, for him to not really explain it.
That's a good point. This is probably his most like restrained movie in that regard.
Oh, for sure.
Like compare this to Big Trouble in Little China, and it's like two different directors almost.
Well, even like Halloween, you knew that Michael Myers, that was the guy who's going to kill you. You knew what you were up against. And, you know, that's John Carpenter as well.
I think Halloween still stands as my favorite John Carpenter movie, but this is right up there with right up there with that. So let's go around to Mikey, any speak now or forever hold your peace, any last thoughts before we get to scores?
I've just always enjoyed this film, and it's a solid movie, and I enjoy the not really knowing who is the thing at the end, and leaving it at that. So just a good solid film, as Carpenter intended.
It is solid. I'm gonna have to show this to my dad next time I'm home. You know, this is maybe you and Jesse have the same sort of relationship. I made my parents take me to the Pokemon movie when I was 7 or 8. To the local Muscatine Theater, and you know, they sat there mortified at, you know, what was probably the worst 90 minutes of their life, and I sat there totally enthralled by the whole thing. You know, this is the one with Mewtwo, and you know, you all know what I'm talking about. And so now to this day, I will come home on like Christmas vacation and say, hey guys, you want to watch a movie? And my dad will look at me dead in the face and say, is it going to be like the Pokemon movie?
Jesse and his siblings used to watch me play Legacy of Kain on PlayStation 1, and that scared the Jesus out of them.
That's awesome.
I'd say that my dad probably more cinephile, almost. I don't know what the right word is. Growing up, we rented a movie like every weekend. And, you know, we'd watch it and talk about it, and during the movie, he'd make predictions and stuff like that. And I kind of lost that thread, but I still went to the movies by myself in high school. Kind of fell off the wagon, but I'd say, yeah, probably was more a lot pretty well versed.
Well,
that's good.
Let you watch movies that you probably shouldn't have been watching at a certain age, but now let you watch them anyway.
I mean, that's a great podcast discussion for another time. Like, what was the first rated R movie your dad ever let you in on? I think my dad let me watch Terminator 3 when I was probably like 11 or 12 or something like that. So, nice. Always a special moment. So, all right, guys, I'm gonna give. Oh, go ahead, good.
Sorry, I just have a couple quick, like, fun little trivia things I learned from the commentary track I wanted to mention. I thought you guys would enjoy. So, like, early in the movie, we see, like, that the helicopter, like, crashes and everything. And they were talking about how they had a couple, like, bush pilots, because they're out in Alaska for some of the filming in British Columbia. And they said they were just, like, really crazy, like, wild men type. Like, they called one of them the Lawrence of Alaska, which I thought was really funny. And they said one guy was, like, so crazy he offered to, like, crash the helicopter for real, for money. And this other thing, which I'd seen this movie 3 times before, never noticed this, but pay attention next time you watch it when Blair is going crazy, like smashing that room up with the axe, and Keith David runs in, he kind of like hides one of his hands behind MacReady, And he had gotten in like a car accident, and he has this ridiculously large, like, fake hand because it was all bandaged up, so they had to put this like paper mache hand. And it is so hilarious. It's just like enormous. Like, it's too good. So I just wanted to mention those quick.
This is like one more thing I had on my list. Did anybody else notice that when they went to visit Wilford Brimley out in his shack, that he had a noose? Funny.
Prominently displayed too. It wasn't like in the back. It was like straight.
Well, I think that like, well, anyway, yeah. I saw the noose, and my interpretation was that's how we knew he was go like that's how we knew he was gone, because he like didn't follow through with it. So the thing like finished its job inside of him or whatever.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay. So let's get to scores and we'll wrap this sucker up. I'm gonna go ahead and say four. There's nothing like inherently wrong with this movie where I wouldn't give it a five. I do think of the special effects conclusion is maybe a little bit of a letdown compared to some other stuff in the movie. I it's an awesome date movie. It's short, it's well paced, excellent music, looks great. Kurt Russell has an awesome hat, and this movie is just Beard City. Lots of love about it, but it's just, it's like Neil always says, you got to save room for Seven Samurai. You got to save room for your all-time favorite. So I'm going to say four. I just don't, a five, I got to feel it in my balls. That's the only way I can describe it. And I've never felt that way about the thing, although I really, really do like it. So I'll say a four. What about the molars?
Yeah, I agree with you. It was really cool. It was definitely unique, but there was just some things that were kind of weird or off and didn't click all the way, but super fun. I probably will watch it again. Four.
I give it a four, and I'm a John Carpenter fan, but it's a four.
You want to go next, Neil?
Yeah, Neil.
I'm also going to give it a four. Like, it's a great movie, and yeah, it's just not like one that's specifically made for me, but it's great.
Nice.
And last but not least, Gideon, what you got?
Easy five for me. I love this movie. It's definitely a newer favorite. But yeah, I love movies that are like rewatchable. I love the setting. I love the cast. All the paranoia, the ice just setting and everything like that. I just think it's so cool, the sci-fi. I really need to watch more of John Carpenter's stuff. I still haven't seen the original Halloween. I think maybe the only other thing I've seen is Christine by him. And I like that. That was fun. And I
Yeah,
think
have you seen
it's
Escape from New
kind
York?
of
it's no, I haven't seen Escape from New York. And were you saying Big Trouble in Little China?
Oh yeah, that you gotta watch that one. That one's
That well, it's funny you mentioned that because even we have like a whiteboard where me and my girlfriend will do picks for like my pick, her pick, and her next pick is Big Trouble in Little
Oh,
China.
there I
So
am. There you go.
we're gonna do that very, very soon.
It's a wild ride. I love that movie.
I'm excited. I can't wait. But yeah, I eat this
What's
movie
the
up.
Chinese actor who's like in every single movie? He's in Big Trouble in Little China. We mention him on the podcast all the time. Starts with a J. I gotta
James
look it
Hong.
up.
James
James
Hong.
Hong. Yeah. James Hong is I think like one of the villains in Big Trouble in Little China. So
Okay, nice.
we definitely got to do that and continue. We got to have like James Hong January or something next year. Well, guys, thanks for coming on, Mike and Jesse. It was good to have you guys on. I guess the only thing to figure out is what we're doing for next week, and if I'm correct, is it my turn, guys, to pick the movie?
Yeah, I mean, Mike, thanks for getting us off to a strong start for spooky season. But
Oh yeah, thank you.
yeah, Sam, it's your pick by my reckoning.
Oh, shit. I forgot it was forgot it was spooky season because like my wedding is coming up, so I haven't been thinking about Halloween. So I was gonna pick The Great Mouse Detective. Should I pick a scary movie?
Whatever you want.
Okay, let's go with The Great Mouse Detective, and just and maybe I'll throw an audible and figure out a scary movie because I've totally forgot Halloween is coming up.
You can do that too. You know, that's fine.
Yeah, maybe it'll be frighteningly good.
Cool. Dude, Chuck Norris, Silent Rage.
Damn, I've never even heard of that. So maybe we got to do, maybe we'll do like a, you know, next year we'll do like Chuck Norris and Steve Seagal and Jean-Claude Van Damme and those kinds of movies. We'll have Mike back on.
I'd come back on.
Yeah, anytime you want, Mike. You just say the word, and we'll get everybody together, and you can come on the podcast. So, thanks for coming, everybody.
I've added your name to the spreadsheet, so
there you go.
I'll have to have Jesse send a picture of you that I can add to the cover art, because everybody that's been a guest star has had their face on the cover art. So, I'll sit you in the rocket ship right next to where Jesse is.
All right. Cool.
All right, sounds good. See you, everybody next week.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Take care.
See ya.
See you guys.
See ya.